You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Maybe if you walked around Disney Concert Hall on Grand Avenue in downtown LA this month, you've heard this. You're hearing the drone of two people vocalizing after dusk on 2nd Street, a vocal composition called Said, which has a video installation at Red Cat in downtown LA.
The poetics that we were thinking about it when this first came to us was to have also to from our own personal experience of what the pandemic was, especially dealing with mental health, how mobility is a medicine that that helps you get through, and also it's also this idea of like reaching out to something, to someone.
That's artist Carmina Escobar. The focus on connection, on mental health, is central to this piece. It is part of an initiative to present a series of artworks, events, and installations called We Rise, sponsored by L.A. County's Department of Mental Health. Well, KCRW's Angel Carreras has more on these art happenings this month and what We Rise is all about. Hey, Angel.
Hello, Steve.
So what kinds of events and experiences are we talking about during We Rise?
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff to see and experience. The aforementioned Said, for instance, by artists Dorian Wood and Carmina Escobar, is just one example of many. And let's talk about their piece. So this little bit sounds like Gregorian chants that feed back through an algorithm to create new sounds every time you hear it.
As the title of the piece Said, which is Spanish for thirst, can attest to, we have all been coming out of this pandemic with a thirst for, you know, for life, for each other, for experiences outside of our own, intimate and nurturing bubbles that have gotten us through this incredibly difficult experience.
That's artist Dorian Wood.
Coming out of this incredibly difficult experience, the pandemic, leads to the unifying theme of these art pieces around town, Steve, mental health.
Right. The Department of Mental Health is actually getting into the art presentation game, right? May is Mental Health Awareness Month, right?
Yeah. So for the past few years, every May, the LA County Department of Mental Health has looked to artists, musicians, and more to create art installations and events around the city. We Rise's participants are very cognizant about this. All pieces are in a way about connection, raising awareness on issues that hurt our communities, erasing stigma surrounding mental health, focusing on how do you heal. And this year, it's much needed, you know, after being cooped up for so long.
The mental health aspect of that really does, I think, boil down to opportunities for self-expression, to get those feelings out, and then to make those connections because, you know, we are each other's best medicine.
That's Karen Mack, Executive Director of LA Commons. They develop art and projects around LA. And We Rise this year has 21 different art experiences, community pop-ups, all these hyperlocal activities across Los Angeles County neighborhoods, and, you know, online stuff because we're still in the pandemic.
Even though the pandemic has been very difficult for us, it is a moment of opportunity. And I think that opportunity is to recognize that we have creative power and that our creative power is our greatest resource. And I think that's really embodied in We Rise.
Angel, you mentioned, 21 art experiences. I mean, tell us about some of these pieces that are around town.
Well, artists involved with LA Commons had a storytelling project.
We had story circles where people talked about their experience with the pandemic, but really looking towards creating our next LA, which is the name of the installations.
And those stories were then shared with 8 local artists who synthesized them and then it blew them up in these big collage type pieces. I mean, one looks like the silhouette of a black man running with an eagle soaring and what looks like a poem in the background. Another includes a painted portrait with text that reads, "Watch the problem or shape the solution." And you can catch those at Exposition Park, Hyde Park, Leimert Park, and Willowbrook. And the full series is available at the California African American Museum. Here's one of the artists, Dominique Moody.
These are kind of like mini mural, and I call them story portraits because they are the portraits of the people who have shared their story with us. And these are all stories that are really ground into exploring for people how they have dealt with this past year.
Moody says the project became a way for people in the community to express what they've experienced during the pandemic and create an artistic vision for a post-pandemic LA.
One of the things that people discussed quite a bit was their sense and feeling that their voices weren't heard, that their concerns were not heard, that they, in a sense, were of communities and groups of people that didn't feel necessarily that they had a lot of power to make the decisions about their own community.
The art is meant to be therapeutic and empowering for the students who told their stories and for the artists who turned them into experiences. And then, of course, after sounds and sights, a medium that combines the two.
A medium? Sounds like a movie.
Steve, yes, a documentary. You see it by scanning a giant QR code on the side of a building on East First Street in Ball Heights. And that building is Self-Help Graphics. They're a community leader in bringing the arts to the East Side community. They do printmaking and art workshops. And they have this wheat-paste mural of street vendors on the side of their building. And next to these vendors' faces is a giant QR code. Scan that, and you're on to the next piece of this installation.
The documentary is called Vendedores en Acción, Vendors in Action.
That's filmmaker Alvaro Parra. His documentary covers the mental health and plight of six vendors in the city. He followed them around for a few weeks to get to know them and their stories. Their road has been painful these past few years. In 2018, street vending was legalized, but at a cost, and it was a long and or confusing process. And in 2020, street vending wasn't allowed during the pandemic.
There are over 50,000 street vendors operating in Los Angeles. 10,000 of them sell food. 80% are women of color. Many are undocumented, unable to receive unemployment benefits. What do? They're faced with a very hard decision. And many of them were forced to go back on and to the streets and start vending. So these are the sacrifices that these folks have taken throughout this year and have been doing so for many years as street vendors. And I think that this documentary shows that they are not anonymous. They are a part of the city. They are a fabric of the city of Los Angeles. And they are out there sacrificing for their families each day to make a living wage.
And connection for vendors, it's vital, not just for earning money, but for well-being. Here's street vendor Faustino Martinez from a scene in the documentary.
Uno como vendedor,
as a vendor, you have connection to the public.
Contacto con el público, se siente uno.
I felt locked down. Whenever folks called, I would say, I'm like a lion in a cage. You can get sick with COVID, but also sadness from not having that connection with the public. Because we're with the people. And without the people, there is no joy. It's only 20 minutes long, but it's very effective. And if you can't make it to Boyle Heights to see this mural, you can head to YouTube to view it by searching Vendedores en Acción or SHGTV, Self-Help Graphics TV. There's a bunch of stuff and it's still viewable. So their website is whywerise.la. So go check it out.
All right. KCRW's Angel Carreras reporting for us today. Angel, thanks.
Steve, thank you.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. So here's a question for you. Did you have a hard time coping over the past year? Maybe the answer is yes, because we had this big pandemic. The solitude, the lack of companionship. Maybe you were one of the many folks who got a new pet. Adoption and fostering rates soared in 2020. One survey from Rover.com. Yeah, you heard that right. There's a website called Rover.com. said 93% of people who got a pandemic pet said it actually did improve their mental and physical health. But now that your life is opening back up beyond the walls of your house or apartment, is there still room in your life for that furry new friend? Marsha Mayetta is Director of Animal Care and Control for Los Angeles County. Marsha, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Did you see a boom with the pandemic of people coming to get dogs and cats?
Absolutely. Our adoption rates just went through the roof, and we also had a lot of people interested in fostering pets, which was a great new opportunity for the animals. So they could go into homes for a short period of time, get extra TLC, and then we learn more about them and do a better job placing them into new homes.
Is that still going on, or because we maybe see a light at the end of the tunnel, people are getting back out of their homes, that maybe we're seeing, you know, the slowing of the adoptions, or maybe, I dare say, people bringing pets back?
We are not seeing people bring their COVID-adopted pets back. I think when they made that decision to adopt, they thought through it and realized that they were able to make a lifetime commitment to the animal. A lot of times, the biggest challenge of getting a new pet is just the initial introduction into your household and letting them get used to the routine and learn the rules, get used to new other pets in the household or family members. So that's what put people off before. And now that they had the time, they said, okay, this is a great time to get that pet I've always wanted because I can now get them, you know, into the whole family routine. So I think they are very committed to their animals. We are seeing people surrender pets, not COVID pets, but just because for economic reasons. The biggest are medical concerns that they can't treat and also housing issues. So we are working with folks to provide resources and referrals to help them through these challenges so they can keep their pets.
I suspect this is, Marsha, this is like, you know, when two humans move in together, right? When you bring in another animal, another being into your environment, it takes an adjustment on both sides, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, we added a new dog to our household last November, and it really took a lot of oversight. She was a little bit of a juvenile delinquent at the beginning and had to learn the rules. And, you know, she did, and she's fit in really great now.
So you said not so many people returning pets because of the pandemic, you know, slowing down. What about the folks that you say, you know, because of economic means? Is there like a strategy to make them reconsider? Is there help? What do you tell them when they're bringing back their pets?
Well, you know, a lot of times when people are considering bringing their pets in to surrender, they just don't realize what other options are there. They don't want to surrender their pets. They love their animals, but they just don't know what to do. And sometimes it's a minor medical concern, an ear infection, for example, and they just don't have a few hundred dollars to go get that treated. So we do have vouchers, and we work with veterinarians in the community. Sometimes we can provide treatments ourselves, but usually through the voucher system that's funded by our foundation, the Los Angeles County Animal Care Foundation, which is a nonprofit that raises money to help animals in the county animal care center system. We're able to provide these resources. They may need training, assistance, and advice. They may need help building a fence to keep their pet confined. There's a lot of things that can happen. So we try to provide resources and solutions for them.
What's the shelter situation like right now? I mean, are shelters at capacity? Do we still have a lot of animals to, I mean, there's always a need, right, to help animals. What's it like for you guys?
You know, it's really the best it's ever been. We had to implement changes in how we did our intake services. Before COVID, we just accepted any animal that came to us without really any measure of control. And we were overwhelmed. And we've heard the discussion about capacity for care with our human health system during COVID and how it was crashing because they were so overwhelmed. And we were really exceeding our capacity for care then. And what we did through COVID, because we knew we couldn't close our doors, we had to stay available for the animals and people that needed us, but not everybody needs us. And what we did is begin our managed intake process, which we call alternatives to impoundment. And these are the some of the tools that I've talked to you about as far as providing resources for people not to surrender their pet. It also means our officers are scanning pets in the field when they pick up stray animals and they scan them for microchips or look for identification tags, and they'll take them home to the pet's home. And if the owner's home, they can return it right then rather than bringing it into the care center. And we also learned that accepting healthy stray cats was really not working, because these are cats that are thriving and doing very well in the area where they live. They're being cared for. They're getting food and getting care. And just accepting them without thinking about the impact that was going to have on that cat's life and the potential owner that is actually caring for the cat and does allow it to go outside. We were taking in way too many cats. And now if a cat is healthy and doing well, we ask the people bringing it in to allow it to remain there, because obviously the cat is doing okay. And we are working on providing additional spay-neuter services if the cats aren't spayed or neutered already, because we don't want to see the populations increase. But through all this and through our foster program, especially for foster kittens, we've really been able to reduce our incoming animals by about 50%. And what that's done is it's been a tremendous boon to the animals that we do have to take in, that do need our care, that are sick or injured or have behavior issues, because now we can focus on them as individuals. And the animals that are in our care centers are a lot less stressed because it's not as overpopulated. And we've seen our infectious disease rate drop by more than 50% because their immune systems aren't so compromised any longer. So it's really been a win-win for everybody.
You mentioned cats, and if there's an indoor-outdoor cat, right, that somebody has or maybe doesn't have a collar on, you're not collecting as many cats. But what about kittens? Because this is the time of year when we see a lot of boxes of kittens, right? And what do you do in a situation like that where a cat has a litter and then you've got to do something with those kittens, or elsewise you're going to have stray cats?
Right, exactly. We really focused on increasing our foster kitten program. And what we do first is ask somebody who's found a litter of kittens to please monitor the litter for a few hours, because the mother may be nearby. And if there is a mother caring for those kittens, that's the best care those kittens can get. If there's no mother available and people are willing to foster the kittens, we provide free fostering kits with milk replacer and bottles and all the supplies that they will need to raise those kittens up until they're old enough to be spayed or neutered in place for adoption, which we will help with. And if the finder can't foster the kittens, we have a huge resource of volunteers that do this for us. And we will get those kittens into a foster home right away, and then their lives will be saved.
We can't let you go, Marcia, without asking you, what critters do you have at home? Who are your furry friends?
Well, we have two Great Pyrenees dogs that we adopted from Great Pyrenees Rescue of Southern California, and a golden retriever that came from one of our animal care centers, and a Shire horse, which is a large breed draft horse, oftenly mistaken for Clydesdale.
Marcia Maeda, Director of Animal Care and Control for Los Angeles County. Marcia, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, now back with Greater LA on KCRW. Here's a question for you. What do painters have in common with boxers? At first glance, it seems like nothing, but a new art exhibition at Blum and Poe in the Culver City area begs to differ. It's called On Boxing, and our resident art expert, Lindsay Preston Zappas, went to check it out. She's the founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Hey, Lindsay.
Hey, Steve.
Painting and boxing. who curated this show, and how did they get interested in boxing?
Yeah, so the show was actually curated by one of Blum & Poe's owners, Jeff Poe, and it was inspired by his own memories of watching boxing with his father growing up, you know, kind of sitting on the couch together, watching on TV, and then eventually going in person to see boxing matches. And he talks about watching the movements of these boxers and kind of starts to equate the boxing ring to a canvas in a really interesting way, and kind of talking about how patterns begin to emerge, you know, with the boxers, anything could happen anywhere, and sort of talking about how each boxer has their own way of dancing and jabbing and moving through the ring. So the show, I think, is really a celebration of artists and their own unique style and method of kind of dancing and jabbing, or I guess here, in other words, you know, the artist movement across the canvas in their own work.
Yeah. So the dancing and jabbing, like, you know, we're talking about strokes, right? I mean, that's basically
brush
what
strokes or maybe and, yeah,
brush
exactly.
strokes, right? Yeah. Yeah. Or I mean, I'm also picturing, like, you know, sculptures made of boxing gloves, perhaps. I mean, but maybe it's even more abstract than that.
Yeah, the work on view is actually all abstract, so nothing super literal here. But I will say there's one side of the gallery that has these two really beautiful polished black obsidian works by the artist Anya Galaccio, and they hang facing each other in the gallery. And then these are next to two red tapestry works by Anna Betbezi. And you know, they started to look like boxers standing off, like these two black gloves facing each other and a red robe for each fighter. So I think that's as literal as it gets, although all those works are abstract as well.
What were some of your other favorite pieces in this exhibit?
Yeah, I really enjoyed two works by Lauren Quinn. Again, very colorful. And her paintings just have these layers and layers of pattern and form that she stacks to create these almost psychedelic patterns. You kind of get lost in them trying to understand what came first and what's going on. And then on the top layer, she actually scrapes paint away in these kind of swirling lines that reveal a multicolored underpainting. So there's this really interesting process that she goes through of adding and removing pigment. And then in the center of the gallery, there are these ceramic works by Brian Rochefort, these kind of big ceramic vessels, and they just have these layers and layers of glaze applied so that the textures and the colors almost ooze together and they feel like they're almost paused in motion, like paused mid-drip or something. Really wild textures there. And then Maisha Mohammadi's paintings are such a treat to see. She sort of oscillates between these large planes of color and then smaller details and leaves a lot of the raw canvas exposed. So I felt like her work really kind of illustrated that idea of a boxer moving through the ring.
I understand, Lindsay, that Maisha Mohammadi actually has a solo show right now in at a gallery in Boyle Heights. Talk about that.
Yeah, so this is at a gallery called Parrish Heinen, and so great to see a solo show of her work because you really start to kind of dig into her process and methodology. Maisha actually applies a lot of her paint with her hands, which you might not know at first, but you know, she actually told me that her hands make their own decisions and she really trusts them when she's making the work. So you start to pick that up. There are certain areas where there are little thumbprints or these marks that almost look like finger painting. So there's this kind of undertone of this physical connection that sort of traces the arc of her own body as she's making the work. And then across the paintings, there's always this really thin line, and she does apply this with a paintbrush that create movement and might arc across the canvas and then become a little scribbled moment, you know, on one corner. And another detail I really love is she uses these canvas colored paint to almost like white out, like she's almost correcting her own marks. So she has little dabs and subtle details of this canvas color and all these details that you can really hone in on.
Well, Unboxing just opened at Blum and Poe in the Culver City area, runs through June 26th, and Maisha's show over at Parrish Heinen runs through June 11th in Boyle Heights. Lindsay Preston-Zappas, founder and editor-in-chief of Carla Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, thanks.
Thanks so much, Steve.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, it may not be permanent housing, but it is housing at motels and hotels all across the state of California. How Project Home Key could be transformative in getting people off the streets. And before you leave us tonight, a big, big thank you for your help in getting us over the top and raising the money for us to operate this public radio station. You know, KCRW is a part of the community with the stories that we tell, the music we play, the events we put on throughout greater LA. We hope you continue to support it. We have a whole lot of gratitude for everything that you've done for us up to now. Thank you, thank you, thank you for your support. By the way, if you didn't get it in for the Drive to the Future, you can contribute anytime at kcrw.com/give. And while you're at the website, while you're there, we're going to nudge you toward the Greater LA site too. You can subscribe to our podcast. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how we're doing. Give us some thoughts about the things you think we should cover in Greater LA. It is all online, kcrw.com/Greater LA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Nihar Patel, Sonia Geis, Michael Stark, Mario Saavedra, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all helped put today's show together. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have yourself a great night.